We now have a new challenge, perhaps the most monumental in recorded history. The opportunity to investigate a phenomenon that could change our destiny. A look at ourselves 1,000 years in the future.
We're going to examine and perhaps question some widely held theories of what may have happened to this Earth of ours. We're going to investigate some strange and bizarre events in the present. Unbelievable happenings as fresh as today's headlines. And more important, perhaps, we're going to take a searching and scientific look into the future. We're reaching more and more out into space. Perhaps as we may learn, someone, something, somewhere in space is reaching out to us.
Who the visitors are, where they're from, and what they want is unknown.
Bigfoot was attracting national attention and was now rapidly becoming the most intriguing mystery on the North American continent. Scientists and photography experts have examined the individual frames of this film and have come to the conclusion that the film and the creature are authentic.
Telepathy, psychokinesis, Bigfoot and black masses, UFOs and Atlantis, Kirlian photography, cloning, and cryonics.
These subjects all have one thing indisputably in common. People want to know more about them.
The mankind's future on Earth and beyond.
Welcome to After Dark Radio with your host, Brian Alvarez.
How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on After Dark Radio. It is May 8, 2016. After Dark Radio here on the Dark Matter Digital Network on Mother's Day. Hopefully everybody had a really fun Mother's Day. We got a real fun show for you here tonight. And before we get into it with our guest Tim Banal, I want to talk about some of the things that you can catch right now, no matter where you are or where you are listening to this or when, on the After Dark Radio Show website. If you are a fan of monsters, this is the week for you. Front page of AfterDarkRadioShow.com. Two new shows talking a lot about monsters. For example, the new edition of After Dark Radio, last week's show, is now available on the website, After Dark Radio, May 1st. Creature stories from every state in the Union. We actually had a solo show looking at a lot of the big stories in the news. And one of those stories was a link to an article that basically went through every state in the Union and talked about what monster stories were reported from that state. So no matter where you are in the world, you can go up there and find out what the local legend, the local monster legend is in your area. That is the May 1st After Dark Radio. It is up right now at AfterDarkRadioShow.com. Also, if you are listening live, we, of course, on Sunday nights always do a double feature. It is After Dark Radio followed by Dragon King Dark with Carl Stern. And tonight's show is going to cover monsters as well. If you happen to miss it, it will be available on the front page of AfterDarkRadioShow.com as well. This from Carl's description of tonight's show. It is episode 17. Of Dragon King Dark Cryptids. Host Carl Stern finally gets around to the big one, cryptids. Finally, he says, a discussion about all of your favorite monsters of the night, including Bigfoot, the Yeti, Mothman, the Loch Ness Monster, and many more you have heard of, and some you may not have. This is one area of pseudoscience, and he explains in this show his hatred for that term, pseudoscience, that he can actually believe in. And he's going to tell you why on this week's show. He's also got listener email that's coming up later on tonight, immediately following this show on the Dark Matter Digital Network. And if you miss it, it will be available as a free MP3 download on the front page of the website, AfterDarkRadioShow.com. And of course, as always, if you head up to the front page, there is a listing of the past episodes of the show. Every show that we have done since we launched the new website is available there for free. Dozens of editions of After Dark Radio, dozens of editions of Dragon King Dark. If you're hearing these shows for the first time, think of all of them that you could go up and listen to absolutely free in the archives. That is AfterDarkRadioShow.com. That is the website, so head up there and check out the latest shows. We've also got a new column by Mark Howes. Does columns for us every single week. It's a very interesting one here this week. It is a look at coincidences. I will read the first part of this, and then you can go up and read the rest for yourself. Mark writes, in a slight break from the usual format of these columns, this week I have been thinking about coincidences, thought it might be fun to scour the internet and find some tales of obscene chance and go through my favorites here. I'd gotten to pondering the coincidence when chatting with a friend of mine, whom I rarely see, as he lives in northern Finland. We were reminiscing about a very strange coincidence that occurred between the two of us a couple of years ago. I was scrolling absentmindedly through my Facebook feed when I happened across a photo of two of my friends posing together. It didn't occur to me until a minute or two later that there was absolutely no reason that these two people should know each other. One is a singer in a popular metal band from Finland, and the other is an exotic dancer whom I used to work with when I worked at a club in Leeds. She's a Romanian girl who had recently moved to Canada. And there they were in a photo together. I sent a message to my pal saying, "How do you know her?" And he replied that her and her friend were at a gig of theirs in Ontario. Her friend knew one of the other guys in the band, and somehow they were backstage and met. When I explained how I knew the girl in question, he was equally impressed by this coincidence. Off I went into the web, and here, he says, are some of my favorite tales of coincidence. You can check all of these out. Front page of AfterDarkRadioShow.com. New column by Mark Howes, which is up there for you to enjoy. In a moment, we're going to be joined by our guest for the day. Tim Banal has been a podcaster since before the term podcast really existed. He kicked it off in 2005 with a paranormal show, Banal of America, and he has interviewed all of the biggest names in this field. We have so much stuff to talk about. We'll discuss everything from UFOs, aliens, Bigfoot, monsters, and the art, so to speak, of podcasting itself. If you've ever worried or wondered, not worried, hope you haven't worried about podcasting. If you've ever wondered about the podcasting, the rise of podcasting, the number of paranormal podcasts that are out there today, how this all got started, changes through the years, we'll talk about that as well. And of course, monsters. I believe it was George Norrie who once said, monsters, giants, and other issues. We'll talk about those on the show today, so stick around, everybody. Back in a moment with Tim Banal here on After Dark Radio on the Dark Matter Digital Network. We are back here on After Dark Radio. Brian Alvarez here. After Dark Radio, Dark Matter Digital Network. Very happy today to be joined by Tim Banal, Banal of America. A lot of different things to talk about here today. Everything from podcasting to the paranormal, maybe even some wrestling. Tim, what's going on?
What's going on, Brian? Thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. I'm a huge, enormous fan of Figure Four Daily and Wrestling Observer, and I've listened to hours upon hours of you and Dave talking. So it's like, hopefully I won't zone out and think I'm listening to to an MP3 from the show. So from the website, yeah, I'm a big fan. So it's pretty cool to be on the show. So thanks a lot.
You know, what's really strange is whenever I hear about somebody and I do a little bit of investigation, and suddenly I realize we're Facebook friends. And I think I did that with you quite a while ago, actually. I don't know where I heard the name Tim Banal, but I thought, God, that name sounds familiar. And I went and started doing some investigations, and then I ended up on Facebook, and then I ended up on your page, and then I saw friends with a check mark, and I was like, how about that? So apparently we've been somewhat, I guess, acquaintances for quite some time.
Yeah, we've been Facebook friends for a while. Yeah. Like I said, I'm a subscriber over at Wrestling Observer. I'm on the forum. I don't post much, but I gotta say, I love that guy Hobbs. He's a genius.
Oh man!
If he's listening, Hobbs, you're a genius. That guy's just absolutely one of the most entertaining people I've read in a long, long time. So we're Facebook friends, man. I think I reached out to you because I had Leslie Wagner Wilson on my show based on your interview with Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho asked, for a recommendation on what show he should listen to of this show, and you told him Leslie Wagner Wilson, and everybody was raving about it on the forum. And I reached out and got her on my show, and it was amazing. It was a really amazing conversation. So, yeah, I think that's about when I was like reached out to you and was like, "Hey, man, thanks for this inadvertent tip because this was a great show."
Now, When I first started doing After Dark, I think everybody knows the story, so I won't spend a lot of time on it, but I was a big fan of Art Bell, and growing up, I listened to the show all the time, and then I fell into wrestling radio, which was the other thing that I loved, and when the website got big enough, and I could sort of just do whatever I wanted, because if someone listened, that was great. If they didn't listen, who cares? I decided, I'm going to do this After Dark show. And I started it up mostly just because I thought it would be fun and maybe we would have some listeners. But the next thing I know, we had a ton of listeners because I learned that the crossover between wrestling fans and fans of the paranormal was huge. Now, you've been doing Banal of America probably as long, I think it's actually as long as I've been doing the website, like 2005, is that right?
Yeah, we started the show in 2005.
2005. So, I mean, you were a wrestling fan. I guess tell us a little bit about how you got into podcasting back when there was pretty much no such thing as podcasting.
Well, it was from listening, actually, ironically enough, to like wrestling radio shows. It was like you could go to these sites and download the MP3s, and it was like they didn't call it podcasting. They just said, download the MP3 of my conversation with this guy, and it was like, what is this? You can do this, you know? And it was like before, there's a weird like transition where the internet was trying to like emulate radio and trying to like make radio on the internet. Obviously, there is radio on the internet now, but like back then they were trying it. And it was like this new idea came along. It was like, forget trying to be like radio. Let's just do our own programs. And I was like, well, if it's that, the hardest part of the whole thing was trying to figure out how to make an MP3 out of a WAV file. It's like you didn't even, you know, you had to actually have some kind of relative rudimentary technological know-how to do that back then. It was like, there was no such thing as podcasting. It was like, I'm just going to call people, talk to them, record my conversations with them, with, you know, obviously with their consent and everything. It wasn't like some cloak and dagger thing. And then turn them into MP3s and put them up on my website and see if people want to listen to them. And they did. And the next thing I knew, after a few years, this thing was called podcasting. And it was like, oh, no. Because I'm really a Luddite when it comes to all this stuff, amazingly, even though I've been in it for so long. I was saying on another show the other night, it's like, I'm amazed, like, you do a really great job of, like, connecting people on all these different platforms. I'm kind of like, just go to the website, download the MP3 like you used to in the old days. I don't know, I get it on your iTunes eventually, don't worry, I'll figure it out. It's like, I am on iTunes, but it takes me forever to update the feed, and I'm not on, like, all these 80 different podcast download services and stuff. It's gotten so big. It's unbelievable. It's really amazing. But I've stayed true to my practically as Amish as you can get roots when it comes to podcasting. So yeah, we're really raw in that sense.
Well, I do have a guy who does all of that sort of stuff. So it's not just me, but I do a lot of the production of it, which is also very rudimentary because everything I have is hardware with a couple of software like to record and everything. But I do remember back in the day where I used to use Audacity and you could record, but in order to actually convert it to an MP3, you either had to have a separate program or you had to download some sort of add-on, which would then allow you to convert to MP3. And looking back on it now, I mean, I hadn't even thought about that until you brought it up, but it was sort of like, can you imagine a recording program you can't make an MP3? It was ridiculous.
Yeah. It was like, it took me like 2 months to find the right the right website that would explain it in a way I could understand it. It was like that crazy. So yeah, it was a weird world. It's amazing how much things have changed.
Now, we look at things today like the Dark Matter Digital Network and 24/7, there's paranormal shows, streaming, and obviously you go outside the Dark Matter Digital Network, there's all of these different podcasts. I mean, in the last 10 years, it's crazy how many podcasts there are right now. And if you're a fan of the paranormal, I mean, there's a million of them for you. I guess you're probably not surprised by the growth.
No, I'm not surprised, especially because, like, there's all these different niches. It's like, there's shows just, I think there's a show, I'm pretty sure somebody mentioned, there's a show, like, just devoted to the JFK assassination. It's like, how they can do that, I have no idea, but apparently they can. So, you know, there's Bigfoot shows and ghost shows, and my show just covers, like, all the different stuff. So I'm not really surprised. It's like, once people figured out how to, it's like blogs, you know? Once people figured out how to do it and it became easier, more and more people did it. And it's really, what's amazing to me, in a sense, is, like, just the way the market, for lack of a better term, has changed in the last decade or so. It was like back when I was a big Coast to Coast fan. I still am, and that's how I got into this, listening to Coast to Coast. And it's like back then, I remember it was like there was Coast to Coast. I don't know if you've even heard of this guy. There was a guy named Rents. He was like the
yep.
He was like the WCW to Coast, and I don't know. He's still around, I think, but it was like he was a big, big, prominent dude. He was the number two show, and Alex Jones was like on some rinky-dink thing that no one had really ever heard of. So, and that was it. That was really it. There was maybe like three or four other shows, but you could count the number of actual like shows you could listen to on like maybe two hands. It was amazing. So it's now I look back and I'm like, oh my God, there's so much stuff. There's so many shows. You know, it's hard to really, I don't even listen to many shows or any shows really because I just don't have the time. It's like this, what to choose from. And I don't know how you are, but I'm like, I don't want to listen necessarily to somebody else's show because then it might influence me too much or I might be like, oh, I suck or something like that, you know. So I try to just stay in my lane.
You know, I actually listen to a lot of different shows. I figure if you listen to a lot of different shows, you can't get stuck emulating one show, if that makes any sense.
That's true.
But there's a lot of things you can learn from a lot of different people. But I remember that I was calling somebody. I just mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. I was calling somebody for a show, and some wires got crossed. And long story short, it was the wrong day to call this person. But as we were briefly talking, they mentioned, "Man, what show are you from? I've done like 100 shows in the last month." And I thought, okay, hold on a second. What am I doing here? Like, are we all just interviewing the exact same people over and over again? And, like, my show is the same show as everybody else's, and you've all heard this a million times. And so I asked the audience, I was like, do you guys really want to just hear the same people? Or, and I never had this person on the show before. I was just asking, like, does the audience listen to all of these different shows? And so when I have so-and-so on, they're just like, man, I've heard this guy 100 times this month. And the answer that I got was most people said, you know, we only listen to your show, and we like to hear this, and we like to hear this, and I guess I kind of think that that's how it is. Like, there are a million paranormal shows, but everybody has their show, and for whatever reason, they like that show, and they like that host, and they like that special mix, and so I guess maybe everybody should just keep doing what they're doing, but it felt to me for a second like, maybe this is totally oversaturated and everybody is just interviewing the same guys and it's a waste of time to keep doing this.
Well, I don't ever, yeah, it's not a waste of time. Don't ever think that. I mean, this, if you enjoy it, you really just have to enjoy it. You have to enjoy talk, like you really want to talk to people like in this crazy field. That's, you know, if you're ever like, I've had enough of these people, then you can get out of it. But when the oversaturation comes from, you know, somebody will put out a book and the next thing you know, it's like they spam like every show out there to get on as many shows. That's the, you know, and I don't fault them for that. They're trying to sell their book. But that's sort of a natural thing that happens. And generally, like, if I get an email like that, I don't have them on the show because, like, they were on Coast to Coast on Sunday. They're on this show on Tuesday. They're on that show Thursday. And then next week they're going to be on these two other shows. It's like, what, you know, no one's going to want to really, I don't think anyone's going to really want to hear that or, you know, or they're not going to be, they're going to be like robotic or something, I feel like. So they've done a million shows, so they just do the same shtick. Sometimes I like to wait like 6 months or so, and then I'll get back in touch with them and be like, hey, man, you want to do an interview about that book now? Now that you're not doing like 80 shows, and maybe you'll have some new stuff to say and everything. So,
yeah, I remember one time I sent a show in for it was this show, and I was told, yeah, it was on earlier this week. And I was like, ah, here we are, second show on the network in the same week with the same guy, but I do remember, like, Leslie Wagner Wilson. I don't know. I didn't book that guest. My producer booked her. And I don't even know if she'd ever done another show. And it was like a first-time guest. It hadn't done any other show. And I still think that's the most popular show that we've ever done. You think about all of the individuals that are big names in the field, and they've done a million shows. And they're all fun and great and everything like that. But I think the most popular show I've ever done was somebody that nobody had ever heard of before.
Yeah, she's an amazing person. Her story is absolutely amazing. And, the challenge is trying to find different people. Like, one of my favorite guys that I've had a couple times is Oh, damn. Now his name escapes me, but the gist of it is maybe it'll come to me while I'm telling the story, but he's the head of the International Cruise Victims. If you want to do a creepy show, do that one. It's about how cruise ships have no laws. There's no police force. There's no anything. There's no one to administer authority on a cruise ship except the captain, and they don't care. So it's like when something terrible happens, like women get attacked and stuff, their answer is like, all right, well, we're leaving you here in Bermuda then at the next stop. We're sorry you got attacked. Talk to the cops in Bermuda. Get off the boat. It's like that kind of thing. It's insane. It's absolutely insane. There's so many stories, so many victims of chicanery on cruise ships. It's absolutely unbelievable. And the more you listen to it and talk to this guy, it's like, oh, my God, this is crazy. I don't know if I'll ever go on a cruise again. So, and I don't even, I was trying to get a hold of David Paulides, and I was like, I was like, missing people are so weird and fascinating. And then I was like, well, you know what's also I hear a lot about is these people disappearing on cruise ships. And that's how I got involved with that. So, you know, it's like you try and find weird stuff that's still paranormal. But, you know, because I don't know, there's not many people who are like big names in the paranormal anymore. The big tentpole topics, I don't know, they're not that, you can kind of do them to death.
Looks like this International Cruise Victims Organization is headquartered here in Washington. Although in Wikipedia it says Sammamish, like I'm going to have a Sammamish for lunch. It's actually Sammamish, but I'll have to search this guy out here.
Kendall Carver, that's his name.
Kendall Carver.
Yeah.
There we go.
Great guy. And an incredible, heartbreaking story. His daughter disappeared off a cruise ship, and the cruise company was like, yeah, we don't have any video of that. And he like fought it for like 3 years, and finally they're like, okay, here's the video. And it's
really?
Like, you just lied, dude. He's actually testified before Congress. So, you know, I always say on the show, it's like, you know, we get a lot of people on the show talk about crazy ideas, folks, but this guy legitimately testified before Congress. He's doing real stuff here. And it's not necessarily, it's more true crime than paranormal, but it's still like, whoa, that's, if you want to be scared, that's good stuff.
So a couple of months ago, I was down in Dallas for WrestleMania. And I wandered, yep, you were as well, wandered by Dealey Plaza, and you were actually there for a, forget the exact name of it, you can tell everybody, but you were down there at the same time.
Yes, yes, we, I'm good friends with Greg Bishop, he's the host of Radio Mysterioso, folks are looking for other shows, but All of America and Radio Mysterioso, good shows. I'm good friends with Greg Bishop, we're really good friends, and a mutual listener of Greg's show wanted him to come down to Dallas and give like a presentation. And Greg really kind of slipped through the cracks. And this guy was like really adamant about it. So he messaged me and he was like, "If you come to Dallas, you know, I'm trying to get people to come to Dallas. If you come to Dallas, I'll buy you a ticket to WrestleMania." And I've been to a couple, but back when they were like in, I think 11 in Hartford and the one in Philadelphia, 15. And so I haven't been to one of the big stadium shows. And I knew it was going to break a record. So I was like, I kind of want to be there for the record breaker show. So I'll do it. Even though I've never been to Dallas, I didn't even know this dude or anything. And so Greg and I got together with this Steve Ray, and we kind of came up with this idea, Paramania, which is, I said in the message to you last night, it wasn't a secret conference, but it was, we didn't promote it at all. It was free. The idea was, take a weekend, go to Dallas, and we'll all hang out together. And it really was amazing. I think about 20 people or so took the leap of faith and went down to Dallas, and pretty much we all just hung out. And there was a good amount of people who were like, you know, people that are well known in the field. Micah Hanks, Joshua Cutchin, who's been on After Dark, he came down. Red Pill Junkie, who's a big player in the blogosphere of paranormal writing, and Friday we just hung out in Dealey Plaza for like 3 hours and took the tour, and then Saturday we did like little mini presentations in this community center. Everything was done really, really basic, you know, and then we got a room at a restaurant that night and everybody partied, and then the next day we drove all the way out to Aurora, where allegedly this spaceship crashed in the 1800s, late 1800s, and they say they buried the alien at the Aurora Cemetery, and it's this big story. It's been around like forever. They actually have an Aurora conference like the next week. And so we went there, and it was cool because the whole weekend had this real communal vibe to it. And one of the guys who was doing the Aurora Festival the following weekend, he came out to some of the stuff we were doing. He came to the presentations on Saturday, and he was like, "Hey, man, I'm doing this Aurora thing next weekend. You know, Jim Mars only lives like 5 minutes away, so I'm going to give him a call tonight and see if he wants to come out to Aurora tomorrow when you guys go." So, like, we show up at Aurora, and there's Jim Mars, who is like one of my heroes, and just kind of gives this off-the-cuff presentation on the whole history of the Aurora graveyard and the Aurora alien and the airship crash. And it was very magical weekend. It was very, very different, interesting. So it was really, really cool.
So this brings up some questions. First off, when I went to Dealey Plaza, as I've talked about on the show, I was right there, and I looked up, and I thought, man, that school book depository is a hell of a lot closer to this street than I'd always thought it was. You watch movies, you watch the Zapruder film, you hear these stories, it seems like, man, they make it sound like it was six blocks away, and he managed to get the shot.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're there, and it's like, man, it's right there. And when I looked up and then I looked at the road, I thought, this guy could do this. I mean, come on. And then later when I went home, I watched the Zapruder film again. And no matter what they say about where the shot came from, and it doesn't matter which direction it came from, his head would still make this motion. I just watched and I thought, God, that looks like that shot came from the grassy knoll. I'm not even like a JFK conspiracy theorist. I mean, I've read all sorts of things. But I had a book on my Kindle, of all things. Of all of the JFK assassination books I would have on my Kindle, of course it's the one written by Jesse Ventura. And have you read this book?
No, no.
Oh, man. I mean, it's written by Jesse Ventura, and so it's written like the two of you are having drinks, and they try and do it in his voice, and so it's really wacky. But he goes through everything, and he tries to point out all of the holes in the official theory. Now, granted, I've got to go read the other side because it's a very one-sided book, obviously. It's his steadfast belief that this was a conspiracy. But he puts forth all of the evidence, and I don't know what to think about the whole thing. And what are your thoughts on the assassination?
Oh, I think it was probably a conspiracy, but I'm not necessarily sure, like, who orchestrated it or anything like that. You know what I mean? I don't even know if we'll ever really find out. It's so far gone now. It just seems too cut and dry for the guy to have shot him, for Oswald to have shot him from the thing, and then conveniently Oswald gets shot. The whole thing, like, kind of stinks. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. I presume, I feel like, you know, people attach a lot of things to it that are, like, bigger than just the assassination, you know, or it's like, they had to kill him so to send a message, or, like, the United States has never been free ever since, and it's like, some of that scary stuff could be true, but, you know, I just think somebody wanted him out of the way. I think enough people didn't protest or try to stop it either, you know what I mean? It's like, I think the overwhelming powers that be in most of the different pockets of power were like, all right, things would be better if we got rid of this guy, because he's threatening our whatever we're doing, so that's generally what I think.
Did you have any thoughts when you were there at Dealey Plaza? I mean, did it open your eyes in any way, one way or the other?
Well, it's funny because Greg Bishop, we were talking about the event and everything, and he was like, everybody who goes says it's really small, and it kind of had a reverse effect on me because I went there and was expecting it to be really small, and I'm like, oh, it's actually kind of bigger than I expected.
that's the problem.
Yeah, yeah, because he said that, and I was like, I was expecting like to be right on it. No, I didn't. The only thing that stood out to me, and I hope you weren't one of these people. I apologize in advance.
No, and I know exactly what you're going to be talking about.
The people who they run out to the X and they just do these ridiculous pictures. These like
yes
selfies, or there was one guy who like kneeled down and did like a gangsta sign. I'm like, what are you doing, dude? Get out of the road, and B, have some respect, man. Like, what are you doing? It was like, it's just an endless stream of people waiting for the cars to go by, running out to the X, and then doing a ridiculous pose. It was like, this is insane.
I honestly, I mean, if anybody listening to this right now knows, I mean, you can't, there's no way, I cannot believe that in however many years it's been, 50-something years or whatever, that JFK is the only person who's been killed on that X. Because You're right. People kept in, and this is not like when the light was, this was in traffic, running out there and somebody would snap a photo as they stood on the X. I mean, somebody else has to have been hit on that X.
Yeah. It was stunning. I was really surprised that they still use the road. It was like, why? What does it take to shut a road down and turn it into like a monument, man? I guess it's complicated because it's like right in downtown Dallas, but still, it's
yeah. You gotta. I mean, that you basically, I think, get on the freeway going down that road right there.
Yeah, it's quite an important road. It's very. It's just funny because it's like, what are you guys doing? Yeah, that was a surprise to me.
I mean, nobody had told me anything like it's big or it's small. So I just right. went there. I mean, I literally wandered by it. I mean, I swear to you, I was walking down the road and I looked up and I thought, that looks so familiar. And it was Dealey Plaza. I mean, I don't know if I've watched too many documentaries in my life or what, but I mean, I think it's because it is such, they say that more books have been written about the assassination than any other single event in history. And all these documentaries, I mean, you can't turn on the History Channel without seeing a JFK documentary like every couple of weeks or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's just such a larger-than-life event. And then finally you get there, and it's a street in a town with a plaza. That's it!
Yeah, it's pretty, yeah, it's weird. I got the sense standing around there, though, like when we were just kind of standing around, it was like, this is... I mean, I'm at some point that at one point was like the center of the universe of, you know, that everybody, you know, the world changed in this area, in this little patch of land here in Dallas. That's pretty like crazy to think about, you know, because there's very few places you can kind of go to where it's like the whole world changed right here.
I want to talk a little bit about Aurora, and yeah. This is going to be a little meandering. I'll try to make it quick, but
no worries.
When UFC. How's this for a tie-in? When UFC was legalized in New York, the New York Times had a bunch of articles about mixed martial arts. And there was one of them that was actually pretty good. But a lot of the others were horrible. I mean, they were horrible and they were inaccurate. Mm. And I sat there and I read them and I just thought, you know, this is the New York Times. And they can't write an accurate story about mixed martial arts, which is not like... It's no longer an underground thing. It's on Fox Sports. I mean, it's big. This should not be hard to find some people that know what they're talking about mixed martial arts. But this story was, these stories were ridiculous. And I thought, okay, if you can't write a good story about MMA, what about all the other stuff you write about? And
yeah.
I think that a lot of people kind of, I think there are a lot of people, especially in this field, paranormal and conspiracy, that they don't necessarily trust what's written in the newspapers or the official story about various things, politics, world events, whatever, mm-hmm. viruses, whatever it might be. But it does seem to me that when something like the Aurora crash occurs and people start going through old newspaper accounts, they take a lot of this stuff very, very seriously.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
maybe.
I never thought of it that way, yeah.
Maybe it's because I've done a lot of journalism in my life and I've studied it a lot. But let me tell you something. In the late 1800s, the early 1900s, there was so much stuff in the newspapers that was just flat out made up out of thin air. Not like a UFC story where they botch up all the facts, but I'm talking, we got to sell some newspapers. We're going to totally make up a story. And there's tons of them. And so I look back at the Aurora incident, the alleged Aurora UFO crash, and maybe something happened there, but I don't have any evidence that this whole thing was not just completely made up to sell a newspaper.
Right, yeah. I don't disagree. It's really nebulous, and it's super old, and it's like there's no tangible proof other than these alleged witness testimonies, you know, so I don't really know what you can really make of it. And I didn't get the sense, like, not like it means anything, but like I didn't, like at Dealey Plaza, I felt like this place is kind of special, there's something to this place. And at Aurora, I was more just kind of like, all right, I'm in a graveyard, it's not really, you know, I wasn't like, wow, there was once an alien buried in there. Like, I guess I just didn't really believe it enough to get that feeling. I was just like, oh, okay, I guess that's where they said they put the alien. You know, I wasn't like in awe of it, you know, so I just think the story's so old that it's more like folklore at this point.
How much of the story can you tell us, like the gist of it, for those that are listening right now and thinking, oh, man.
I'm, like, terrible at this kind of thing. But allegedly, like, a UFO crashed about a mile away from the graveyard on this hill. We went to the hill where the UFO crashed, allegedly, and a little dead spaceman, I think that's how they described him in the article, spaceman, was in the ship, and they buried him in the graveyard. And then I guess it was in the papers, and then the rumor is, like, the government came at some point in the 1900s. There's different dates and stuff. People claim different things. Like, the government came and took the body away eventually. So, I mean, that's the real gist of it. It's a really bare-bones story, you know what I mean? And I'm sure there are, like, vivid witness accounts of the event that I'm really leaving out, underselling the story, but it's like there's no... They're just witness accounts. I mean, I don't know what you do with that kind of thing. You know what
sure.
I'm saying? Like I said, it's all over 100 years old, so... And it very well could have been manufactured just to get paper sold.
And you know, it is... One thing that is interesting about the whole crash story is that I think there are some people that think, well, you know, through the years, fairies and demons, and now everyone's calling them aliens, and this is all because, you know, the late 40s, early 50s, science fiction, stories about UFOs and aliens and etc., and so that's how the whole thing... But no, here's a story from the late 1800s where they called him a spaceman. Like, where did that come from? Where did they have the idea? I mean, obviously, we'd started to look at different planets and telescopes and everything like that, and I'm sure there were a lot of theories about, is there life out there? But that is interesting that 1897, a supposed space man, and the government took him away.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
I think the government took him away later, but I, like I said, I'm terrible at this kind of thing, so I feel like I may have botched a lot of the story, so I apologize. It's so old, like I said, that I don't know what you make of it. The thing that came out of it for me that I thought was interesting was someone, because it was a nice group of people, it's about 20 people, and a lot of them are well-versed in all these different aspects of stuff. So in conversation about the event, someone mentioned, this is, like, fascinating to me, I need to do more research on it, but I think maybe the listeners here would be interested in it too, because I was like, what? I don't know if it's like a rumor or a theory, or it's like a, almost like this Aurora newspaper thing, where it's like maybe it's based on really scant media from back in the day. But apparently, like, the idea is that there was, like, a group of eccentric engineers or inventors. And when this whole airship wave happened in the United States, like, in the late 1800s, that they weren't necessarily UFOs, but they were, like, this group of eccentric inventors who were trying to develop airships. And it just, to me, I was like, I've never heard that story. Is this true? Like I said to somebody, and they were like, well, you got to look at this, that, and the other thing, and it has a name, like the group has a name, so they kind of knew each other or something, and it was like, what? This is weird, you know? I never heard of that before, so that kind of opened my eyes to the possibility that, you know, a lot of these airships were, which is just almost as cool as aliens in a way. We were like the product of a secret group of eccentric inventors who didn't want anyone to know they were trying to create airships.
You know, we could talk for hours about this because is it, pertains to UFOs. I know you've got some theories about what these are that are more complex than there's a craft visiting us from Venus or whatever.
Hmm.
But what I've always found interesting about it is, as somebody had pointed out to me, if you look all throughout history at the aerial ships that are reported, it always seems like they're only a very slight bit ahead of where our technology is now.
Right.
For example, the chariots of the gods, when in, you know, these flying chariots back in the day, they didn't say, like, they saw something that looked like what we would describe today as an airplane with these fixed wings and a propeller. They said it was a chariot that flew. Now, one could argue, well, all they knew was a chariot, so they could have seen a helicopter and they would have said, hey, it's a chariot that's flying, even though it looks nothing like a chariot.
Yeah.
But now that we get into the late 1800s, the airships, I mean, there is that aspect where you think, okay, you know what? This sounds very much like a Zeppelin. This sounds very much like an airship that we actually did create. But it's a little bit earlier, and if you go look at all the reports that allegedly came from these people that flew the airships, I mean, there was always something they said that was a little bit preposterous. Like, it's just a little bit beyond what we were capable of doing. And then you get into nowadays, and it's like, okay, the UFOs are they're aerial craft, very similar to what we have right now, but there's always something a little bit more advanced, like they can make a right angle turn, or they can go really, really fast. We can't quite go that fast. It's always something very much like what we already have, but it's a little bit more advanced. And I always thought, that is a little interesting. Like, why is that? Why don't we see things that are like so beyond our grasp of technology that we can't even classify it? It's always just something a little bit more advanced, which makes me think maybe there's a lot more to this than nuts and bolts. I mean, maybe there is something, I don't know. Maybe it's, I know you think kind of like all in our heads.
Yeah, not necessarily. Yeah. That kind of, I worry that people will hear that and they'll be like, "What? This guy's a jerk." But it's like not necessarily all in our heads, but like just that it's an interactive situation. Whatever the phenomenon is interacts. Call it like a dance. You know, there's a dance going on between the witness and the phenomenon. So what you bring a lot to the table that people think that they attribute to the UFO. Let's say. You know what I mean? So it's like they may see something and they can't comprehend it, so their mind is like, it's like what we have, but it's a little bit better. You know what I mean? That's kind of an idea maybe of the mental theory. You know what I'm saying? It may not necessarily be that close to what we have or we might have. It might just be like that you're seeing it, you're trying to comprehend it, and you're like, it's the closest thing, you know, your mind does it. You don't necessarily do it yourself. You know, you don't consciously do it. So I feel like the gist of the idea is, and I'm just really kind of like getting into these ideas in the last like year or so, it's just that there's a whole like mental aspect that gets completely overlooked when it comes to UFO sightings and stuff. You know, a lot of the people I've had on my show, we're kind of like a weird little clique of different people, you know, all in different shows. They all kind of have their own shows. We bounce around. We're all kind of friends. And it's like a lot of us, you know, have talked about this, where it's like when somebody has a UFO sighting, it's like you get all this information about the UFO, especially back in the day, but they never like got enough information about the person that saw the UFO. And I think that you lose a ton of information there that might be really important to the situation. You know, and I'm not saying that UFOs aren't real or that they're hallucinations or anything like that. I'm just saying you have to account for the perspective of the witness. Like the other night, I was saying that maybe there's a situation where there are people. There's a lot of people who have these experiences. It happens in a state of sort of like great transition for them personally, which we're starting to kind of figure out. I mean, it doesn't happen all the time. It's not across the board, but it's a recurring theme that comes up. And it's like maybe when you see it, maybe you're like have all this inner turmoil, and your mind has like a mental block, and you see something fantastic. And that is your mind's way of, like, triggering the record, or making the needle skip, so you can get out of whatever is in your mind, you know, whatever's stopping you, you know. And then maybe you don't realize it, you don't see the UFO and go, oh, I'm going to change my life. But maybe, like, you see the UFO, it's pretty amazing, and, you know, a week later you're like, I think I'm going to go back to school, you know. And it's like, no one really would ever consider putting those two things together, but maybe that's what it is. Maybe you know, you're all conflicted, you know, to do your life, you see a UFO, and then you're kind of like, a week or two later, you're like, I think I'm going to ask Jane to marry me. It's time to settle down, you know? And it's like, that's from the UFO, dude, you know? You made the UFO, so you knew to marry Jane. It's like, you know, to go back to what you said, that I was afraid of people thinking I'm an idiot, but it's like, it is all in your head in that instance. I think maybe there are situations like that. That doesn't mean there aren't aliens coming here and checking out the planet, but I think it's a very complex phenomenon.
Well, it is interesting because there are some people that want to lump all of these together into some big phenomenon where, well, you know, UFOs, Bigfoot, all of these things are somehow intertwined. But then you get into the aspect of, okay, but there's a million photos of alleged UFOs and virtually no photos of Bigfoot. Now, on the topic of Bigfoot, I know that you have debated shoot to kill or don't shoot to kill. And
I actually tried to ask Granny that. She put up the posts on her thing where she's like, "We're doing a show tonight. If anyone has any questions,
dude, you
got to
keep
late.
Trying because I got to get her answer."
Yeah, ask her next time you interview.
Keep trying.
I thought she would have a great perspective on that.
Oh, I'll bet she would.
I don't want to compare it to like any of these hot button issues, but I guess if you were going to have sort of like a black and white hot button issue in the paranormal, that's a really fun one to talk about because it's like, what do? You kill it or not? You know, should we kill it? Do we need to kill it to prove that it's real? You know, scientists say kind of yes. I mean, what good is at this point? Videos and photos are no good, and the DNA analysis seems to be really a mess. So, hate to see it. I would hate to. I don't think there's only one, so it's not like if we killed one, it would like make these species extinct. But to me, it's like that. But there are people that are adamant that you don't kill it. You know, when I say on the show, I joke. I'm say, you know, I've got all my bases covered because I think we should kill it, but I reserve the right once it happens to completely do a 180 and you know, completely skewer the person that does it. So I'm admitting ahead of time I'm going to be a hypocrite when it happens. But I feel like, you know, I know you're a big Bigfoot fan. I love Bigfoot. I actually like it more than UFOs. I just find it so, like, magical in a way that this creature could be out there, and it's just amazing to me. So, yeah. And I think, unfortunately, if we're ever going to prove it, we need a body. You know, we need somebody to hit it with a truck. That would be the preferable ending.
You know, I think I'm into Bigfoot mostly because I'm here in Washington, and there's all this Bigfoot stuff. Anytime you get like out of the city limits, there's these bookstores, Bigfoot books, etc. But it's weird because I went to the Bigfoot conference and there was the Tom Powell presentation, and I'd been warned, oh, this guy's very controversial in the Bigfoot community, and he's going to be talking about paranormal Bigfoot. And I was like, oh man, I can't wait for this one. It's going to be totally out there because I'm a skeptic. But I also think if it's out there, it probably is an animal. It just makes sense to me in my brain. It is easier to convince me that there is some sort of animal we haven't found, like a legit animal that eats things, lives and dies, than ghosts and all of the other paranormal stuff. I don't know why it's easier for me to, because I guess there are animals in the world. And anyway, point of this is he does this presentation. And it was amazing to me because he was, like, absolutely right. I don't know if his theory is right, but he was absolutely right in the sense that he said, this hunt for a flesh and blood animal has failed over and over again. And he brought up all of these examples of, they always claim, oh, I was about to get a picture and my camera died. I was about to take a shot and I couldn't pull the trigger. Why does all this stuff happen if not for the idea that maybe this isn't an animal? Maybe there must be. We must look at something else because our attempts to solve this mystery by looking for an animal have failed for 40 years. So it's time to look outside the box. And I was right. I was like, this guy's right. I don't know if he's right about it being a paranormal entity or anything like that, but he is right that how many paranormal Bigfoot stories have been thrown out by researchers because they think this is too ridiculous. It's kind of like, what do you mean too ridiculous? You're looking for an 8-foot hairy biped in Washington. How is anything too ridiculous when you're searching for this story? And I don't know. I mean, he's right. No one can get a photo. The photos are always blurry. The camera traps always fail. The trigger never gets pulled. I mean, maybe there is something that we need to look at besides it's an animal.
Yeah, I think I'm afraid. You already decided to think I'm insane or a visionary. I don't know. But I always put forward the idea, too, that there's a possibility, I think, that the Bigfoot is an animal but possesses abilities that we don't know about yet. And, like, the example I use is, like, if I caught, like, one of those lizards or whatever and cut off its tail and it grew back, and if no one knew that kind of thing was possible, they'd call me crazy and they'd say I was a liar and I faked it. You know, so maybe the Bigfoot has some ability that, messes with people's minds or something. You know what I mean? Or God knows what. But I think maybe the Bigfoot has something to it that is like, if it's an animal, that it might possess some kind of like heretofore unknown ability. But that's kind of my hope, because I really would like it to be an animal. But then there's also the talking about like how it could be from the mind. It's like, I think when we talked, you were saying about the overarching idea of connecting all this. There's also the idea that, like, there's this overall intelligence, this some other that is the paranormal, and it's the, you hear stories about like Native American stories where you know, a shaman or whatever, like, take on the form of an animal. And I guess what I'm just saying is, like, if a alien or an intelligence or something wanted to mess with somebody, or just wanted to be stealthy or God knows what, they could, they probably know what the Bigfoot is. That's what I'm saying. So it's like they'll take on the form of Bigfoot, take on form of deer, take on form of rabbit, you know, and it's like, to them, it's just another animal. But to us, it's like, what? That's a Bigfoot, you know? So there may be something going on there where it's not entirely a flesh and blood animal. It's something they put down on, you know, a hologram or whatever, you know, or it's like, you know, something not entirely physical, something paranormal, you know? So I think there's something to that. Because I think I was saying the other night, there's, like, been Bigfoot sightings, like, in Hawaii. And it's like, forget about just even how it eats and reproduces out there. How did it even get to Hawaii?
It's a boat made of sticks.
No way.
I think the best analogy I can give for those that are on the wrestling side is, whenever someone says that wrestling is fake, there's some people that are they just hate that word. And I was a wrestler. I did it for a decade, and I have no problem saying it was fake. Doesn't mean it didn't hurt. Doesn't mean it didn't take talent or athleticism, but it was fake. We weren't really wrestling, and we weren't really trying to pin each other in a ring. It was fake. But some people have a really hard time with that. And I always think that there's something about how, if you're a wrestler, you feel that if people call it fake, they're not respecting what you do. You know what I mean? Or as a fan. As a fan, you're thinking,
Schultz, that feel fake when he slaps John.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you should respect what you do enough that it doesn't bother you if people call it fake. I mean, are you proud to be a wrestler? Are you proud to be a performer? I mean, if you are, then it shouldn't bother you if people say that it's fake, because it is. Like, if you're proud to be a fan of it and you like it and it doesn't bother you what anyone says about it, then it shouldn't bother you if people call it fake. I think there's something about that word that makes people feel uncomfortable that they're either doing it or they're a fan of it. And I don't think that they should. But anyway, my point is to all of this, I think in the Bigfoot community, people that look for Bigfoot, I think they're self-conscious enough about the fact that they're looking for Bigfoot that if you add in this paranormal aspect, I think it makes them think, well, now I'm really crazy. You know what I mean? Be proud of it. I mean, if you really honestly think that there's a Bigfoot, I mean, if you're going to do it, just be proud of it. And if there's an aspect of it that really makes people uncomfortable, that seems really crazy, I mean, you got to embrace it. Otherwise, what are you doing this for?
Yeah. It's a strange field, the Bigfoot research field. If you even get in, there's a very sharp divide between the paranormal and the non-paranormal. It's very odd. And then there's this new sort of thing that's emerged, like, in recent years. I hate it so much. It's like, people who say they, like, commune with the Bigfoot, and they're like, oh, the Bigfoot comes into my backyard, like, a couple times a week, and I leave apples out for it, and he has a name, and, you know, he's my friend, and it's like...
Habituation.
If they're having that experience, that's awesome for them, but it's like, listen, I wanted this thing solved for, like, at least 20 years, lady, so, you know, where do you live so I can come up there with a shotgun and solve this once and for all?
Wow! So you're pro-gun, it sounds like.
No, not at all. I'm not anti-gun either. I'm agnostic on guns. I just think, like, I guess the irritation is, like, you're hoarding this Bigfoot for yourself, you Bigfoot communer. Like, just, you know, why don't you just at least prove it for everyone else? Just stop, you know. But they always are like, well, I don't need to prove it. I have Bigfoot coming in my backyard every weekend. So I don't know what to make of that, you know. I find that whole idea, like, really strange.
You know, when I first heard about habituation, and these people claim that the Bigfoot was in their yard and communicating telepathically, I mean, I'll be honest. I was like, these people are nuts. They're crazy. What are you talking about? There's a telepathic Bigfoot in your backyard eating your apples? I mean, this is ridiculous. But then, after Tom Powell's thing, my whole thing now is, if you're not open to it, then you're not doing Bigfoot research. I know it's like, it sounds totally nuts, but to the average person on the street, Bigfoot sounds totally nuts. So you may as well go all in. You have to.
In this field, you got to have your mind as open as possible. Because once you sort of like stick to one, once you're like, this is what I think it is, then you then everything takes on a different tint, you know? So there are people who are so like married to the aliens or in UFOs thing that you can't even have a conversation with them about anything else.
Yeah, you can't examine something that's allegedly crazy, but then think that there are things about it that are too crazy. You just can't.
Right, right. And that's part of the problem with this field, in a sense, with the paranormal. It's only starting to get better. I mean, there were some people who were on the fringe, like, in the past, but more people now are kind of waking up to the idea that the stuff that got thrown out is the stuff we need to find and, like, look at, you know? And a lot of people, like the abduction researchers and Bigfoot researchers and, you know, like, UFO research, the UFO community, they didn't even, it was, like, verboten to talk about the occupants until, like, the early 70s, you know, aside from, like, the contactee stories. But it was, you know, legitimate, credible UFO researchers of the 60s and the early 70s were like, get out of here with that occupant stuff. You know, then, like, one brave UFO organization posted the first, like, occupant story, and then everyone was like, well, wait a minute, maybe we should start looking into the occupants. So it's, who knows what got thrown out on the side that really might have been pretty critical. You should talk to Stan Gordon. Have you ever had him on your show?
I don't think so.
He is a UFO Bigfoot researcher in Pennsylvania, and there was a period, he wrote a book about it, there was a period in Pennsylvania in the 70s where there was this crazy wave of UFO sightings, and then as it sort of reached its peak, there were Bigfoot sightings too, and they started to cross paths. And there's like one crazy story about like a dude, he came out, he saw a UFO, then he was like looking up at the UFO, and something was in his peripheral vision, he looks over and there's two Bigfoot like creeping along a fence. It's like, what is that, dude? There's no way this guy made it up. So he was like traumatized. So it's really amazing stories from Stan Gordon.
You know, before we wrap it up, in an attempt to also plug Banal of America, you recently had Mike Clayland on talking about the owls. And I'm in the middle of reading this book right now, and
it's a big book, I guess. I didn't get a chance to read it.
Oh yeah.
400 pages.
And you had mentioned Granny earlier, and long before this book came out, Granny hates owls. Man, owls hooting. She says, if you hear an owl hoot, somebody's going to die.
Oh, and, God. Granny says that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Boy. Now, we've had owls around here, nobody's died, so I can confirm that, in fact, someone doesn't always die when an owl hoots. But she's always been scared of owls and hearing them hoot. And so I thought this book was very interesting, looking at owls, the subtitle, Owls, Synchronicity, and the UFO Abductee. How was Mike on the show?
He was great. He was great. It was tough because his story is very personal, and it's also very complex and strange. So he really had to. I have a luxury of the show. My show is like 2 hours long, and we don't really have a. I can go an extra hour if I want, so we can do 3 hours. So by the time we got to 2 hours, I'm like, dude, stick around because you laid out all this background information in the first like 45 minutes of the show, and we need to now get further into dissecting this, you know, because it's all deeply personal to him. And like I said, very strange, you know. There's a lot of stuff there that I don't quite get. I don't really understand it, to be honest with you. I don't think it's all. When you first hear it, you're like UFOs and owls and aliens. This is silly. But then the more you get into it, you're like, okay, there's something here. There's something going on here, but I'm not sure what exactly it is. And Mike doesn't even know either. So, you know. I don't know what to make of it. I really don't. It's like, where do you put that? Where do you put that into the puzzle of all this? You know, it's kind of like the Joshua Cutchin thing with the food.
Yes.
What are these little side elements that maybe there's something there we should look at?
So if you want to check out this interview, and hopefully we'll get Mike on one of these days, the Banal of America show, which is available on Blog Talk America, your website as well. Let's get some plugs in for everything.
You just need Banal of America, B-I-N-N-A-L-L of America.com. We're also on Facebook. Yeah, I don't even bother going to Blog Talk because I just take them off of Blog Talk and put them on the feed. So it's on iTunes. And there's over 300 shows. So we've done I think like 308 now. So there's tons and tons, and it's free. Never charge a dime for any of this stuff. So it's absolutely free, and you know, people who dig it will, who dig this stuff will be up to their eyeballs in material. So and we've talked to just about everybody you can think of in the field.
Binallofamerica.com, binallofamerica.com is the place to go. You can check out all of these shows. You had a 4-show-in-1-week streak after taking a little time off, but you can head up there and check out all of those. A lot of big guests. And I want to thank you so much for doing the show today, Tim. We'll hopefully do it again sometime. Can't believe this is the first time and hopefully not the last.
Yeah, I loved the conversation. I had a really good time. And like I said, I'm a huge fan of you and Dave, and I love the work you guys do. You know, it's really awesome stuff, and I'm always like, you got to read this stuff. I go to this gas station. This guy, he has the worst wrestling news.
Oh, like, there's it's always that guy.
I guess you don't really run into it maybe as much as like us normal folk who are. But it's like, you know, I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but I came in like a couple days after WrestleMania, and I'm like, yeah, dude, I was at WrestleMania. He's like, they turned Roman Reigns heel on Raw. I'm like, I don't think they did, dude. And he's like, no, they did. And it's like, dude, where are you getting things? He's like, the Dudleys are going to fight the Bullet Club on the pre-show at the pay-per-view. I'm like, why would the Dudleys fight? I'm like, where are you getting your news from, dude? I'm like, go to WrestlingObserver.com or F4WOnline.com. Dude, sign up to that thing, man. That's where you're going to get the real news. I don't know where you're getting this stuff. So I'm a huge, huge fan of everything you guys do. And congratulations, man, on the birth of your daughter. So, you know, may you and Paisley and Whitney have boundless adventures long into the future.
Well, I very much appreciate that. I'm on daddy duty starting in about 2 minutes, so I'm going to head down there for that. But listen, I want to thank you so much again. Binall of America, everybody, check it out. Lots of great shows up there. And we will be back in just a moment here on After Dark Radio, Dark Matter Digital Network. We are back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here, After Dark Radio on the Dark Matter Digital Network. I want to thank Tim Binall so much for doing the show here today. Earlier we were talking about Mark Howes and coincidences and that sort of thing. And the very coincidence that Tim Binall is doing Binall of America started in 2005, which was the same year that I started my wrestling podcast at WrestlingObserver.com. He has been a subscriber to WrestlingObserver.com. We both do a paranormal podcast. It's pretty interesting, but I want to thank you very much for doing the show here today. And of course, as I noted, make sure you head up to the website. We've got all sorts of great stuff up there, including 2 brand new episodes of both After Dark Radio and Dragon King Dark. After Dark Radio from last week, Creature Stories from Every State in the Union, and a Dragon King Dark from this week with Carl Stern looking at cryptids. And of course, that show with Carl looking at cryptids is going to be airing here on the Dark Matter Digital Network next. So make sure you tune in for that. We are, of course, here every Sunday, 9 Pacific, midnight Eastern. Don't forget to check out the website as well as our Facebook page, facebook.com/afterdarkradioshow. We have a good friend, Andrew Lutsky, who is responsible for the Facebook page. He can also hook you up if you want to message him about possibly being a guest or guest requests for the show. Kenneth Nita is also our guest booker. He's kennethnita@gmail.com. I am at Brian Alvarez on Twitter, brian@afterdarkradioshow.com, and Carl, of course, carl@dragonkingcarl.com. All of these email addresses up on the front page of afterdarkradioshow.com. I want to thank everybody at the Dark Matter Digital Network, Keith Rowland, for keeping the thing going night and day, doing a tremendous job. All of the other hosts, make sure you check it out, the Dark Matter Digital Network 24/7 on TuneIn Radio, darkmatterdigitalnetwork.com. I'll be back here next week with more After Dark Radio here on the Dark Matter Digital Network. Sweet.